I'm Robin Gaddis. I'm the lead pastor here. Welcome to Eastlake. This is a church for everyone. Happy Easter. Hope you had a good Easter so far. And take your notes. You'll be in and out of here by 11:30, so don't meet very long. Today we're going to try to answer one essential question. Is it worth following Jesus? That's all we're going to do. One question, is it worth following Jesus? And, you know, Easter is awesome because you have the Easter bunny and you got the kids love the Easter egg hunt. You got the chocolate and there's food and there's family. But we know Jesus is tied in somehow, somewhere. We know he is. And here's how. Easter is essentially the celebration of just one thing, the resurrection of Jesus, which is essential because had he not resurrected, there'd be no such thing as a Christ follower. What makes Christianity different from all other types of things is that we're following someone. We're Christ followers. And everything else, there's someone that found something and then eventually they die or they're going to die pretty soon and they leave behind some rules and you follow those rules. But Christ following is entirely different. It's not about following rules or being a part of any type of organization. It's about following Jesus, which can only happen if he was resurrected. You can't follow a dead guy. So it's an essential, it's a celebration, it's a statement that Jesus has resurrected and you can follow him. Now the question hangs in the air there, is it worth it? That's the big question hanging around. Is it even worth it to follow Jesus though? And in this room, there's lots of different people. There's people who have been following Jesus for a long, long time and they can tell us all sorts of things about Jesus, whether it's worthwhile or not. I'm in my 34th year and I can tell you it's been awesome and it's worth it. But then there's people here that they've just started following Jesus. They've just started. And they're wondering, am I doing it right? And can I continue to do this? And is this going to work out? And that's all normal, by the way, if that's you. Because when you start something new, it's normal to wonder about it. And can I keep doing it? And should I keep doing it? Is it going to work out? And then there's those here today that are just kicking the tires. You're just kind of kicking the tires, thinking, well, I don't know about this Jesus stuff. I don't know if I'm going to buy it. I don't know if it's worth it. It might be worth it. But it might just be a lot of work with no payoff. It could be that. Now write the big idea in your notes, Jesus is worth following. That's going to be the whole idea today, Jesus is worth following. Well, look at a person in the Bible. His name is Peter, and he wasn't following Jesus, and he decided to follow Jesus. We're going to grab some snapshots out of the Bible, and then you can decide for yourself today when you see those, is Jesus worth following? And Jesus, you know, he was always quite... He was quite a character. I mean, he was born famous. When Jesus was born, the story circulated that his mother was a virgin. And the story that she told everyone is that it was God that got her pregnant. So you can imagine they were one of those families. You know, they were one of the ones you thought about. They were down on the end of the block. Or so that's that family. They're a little different. That was Jesus. I mean, from the very beginning, he was very, very famous. He was the person that was born without a father. And then he grows up. Look what they say about Jesus when he becomes an adult. Here he is. Jesus left there and went to his hometown. He lived in a hometown. And many who heard him were amazed. Where did this man get these things, they asked. What's this wisdom that's been given him? What are these remarkable miracles he's performing? Isn't this the carpenter? Isn't this Mary's son and the brother of James and Joseph and Judas and Simon, good Utah family? And aren't his sisters here with us? So he comes from this super large family. He's a carpenter, and that wasn't in your notes, but there'll be some things come up here that aren't, and I'll just read them to you. And he's a carpenter. He works with his hands. And when he was 30 years old, he starts a ministry tour. And it was during that ministry tour that Peter heard him say an essential message. He kept traveling around. He said one essential thing. Turn to God. God cares about you. Now, Peter's a commercial fisherman. I used to fish crab up in Alaska, and so when you work with commercial fishermen, I just want to tell you, they're colorful characters. And he was a colorful character. He didn't go to church. And he left that a long time ago. And although he was a long ways away from God, he wanted to be close to God again, but he had no idea how to get back. Here's what it is for a lot of people. They leave the church at some point, usually when they get old enough, nobody can make them go to church. They leave the church. And then they leave the church, and they go do that for a while, and then at some point they realize, well, I don't know if I want to leave God. I don't know if I want to be far from God. So they turn back around and they think about going back to God, but the only bridge they can see is church. And then they say, well, how am I ever going to get to God? Because I don't want to go to church. And that's Peter. And he certainly didn't want people traveling around telling him all the things that he had done wrong and all of his shortcomings. And Peter was married, so he had a wife. He knew what his shortcomings were. And you know, he didn't need that, but he wanted what Jesus said was exactly what he wanted to hear. And maybe it's what you need to hear today. Turn to God because God cares about you. Turn to God because God cares about you. Now look in your notes what happens. He kind of gets off to a rocky start. I'll read it to you. Peter fell, it's up there and you'll see it. Peter fell to his knees before Jesus and said, "Oh, sir, please leave us. I'm too much of a sinner for you to have around." Jesus replied, "Don't be afraid. Come follow me." Lots of people are afraid to move towards God because they know they just feel like, I don't deserve to be with God. I'm disqualified from being with God. Because of the things that I've done, God wouldn't want to have me around. And that's Peter. Isn't it interesting? We're talking about is Jesus worth following? And Peter didn't think he was worth being a follower. He sees Jesus and he looks and he says, "Well, maybe I think I would like to follow you." But then he thinks of himself. He says, "You never have me around. After all the stuff that I've done," he feels like he's disqualified to be with God. You know anybody in your life, and that's sort of where they're coming from, or they feel like they don't deserve to be with God. Now let me ask a question. You can just take notes. Is there anything you'd like to see happen in your life, but you feel disqualified to have it? You just feel disqualified. I'm never going to get that because I'm disqualified. I was raised with my grandparents most of the time. I lived with them, and my grandfather was like a father figure to me, and he never got to go to college. So he never went to college, but he wanted to go to college, but he never got to go to college because the economy went slamming into his family, so then he had to go to work. And then when the economy approved, the war broke out, and he got drafted. So then he went into the war, and after he went into the war, he got back, and he felt like he was too old to go to college, and then he met my grandma, and they got married, and here come the kids, and he just never got to go. And all of his life, he felt disqualified for certain things. Opportunities would come up, and he would see them, and there were things that he wanted to do with his life, and then there would be a voice inside that said, "But you never went to college. You'll never be able to do that." So I did want to ask you the question today. Is there anything in your life that you really would like to do? Maybe it's to be close to God. But there's some voice that rattles around, and the voice says, "You can't do that. You're disqualified from getting to do that. You don't deserve to get to do that." And for Peter, it was he wanted to be close to God. And Jesus says something great to him. He says, "Peter," he says, "listen, the only way you're ever going to feel like you deserve to be with me is to come follow me and find out. You'll never figure it out from the sidelines." And so if you've ever wondered, you know, does God want me? You'll find out when you're with him. And so that's what Peter does. He sort of follows around a little bit, and he's with Jesus, and he gets a little bit closer. And, you know, Jesus is getting to be a pretty big deal. He's traveling around, and these huge crowds start to develop around Jesus, let me read you what it looked like here. It's not in your notes, but I'll just read it to you. It'll come up here. As Jesus was on his way, the crowds almost crushed him. Can you imagine being that popular? The crowds come around, and you know how crowds are. They don't pay attention to anything. They're stepping on your feet and pushing you around and everything. They're almost crushing him. And a woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years, but no one could heal her. That's a long time to be sick. 12 years she's sick, and nobody can help her at all. She came up behind him, touched the edge of his cloak, and immediately her bleeding stopped. And so Peter sees this right here, and he would have, two things would have struck him right off the bat. Number one is that all the different types of people that were in the crowd. And by the way, the church was not drawing a crowd in that day. The crowd was leaving the church. It wasn't drawing a crowd. And so it was amazing when Jesus, people sort of saw him as a religious guy. It was amazing when these crowds would come around him. And then it was the type of people. For instance, there was women in the crowd. Women really didn't get to be in like crowds where churches were and stuff in that day. They had to set off to the side and be quiet, and women were marginalized. And there was handicapped people and people with special needs and physical challenges in the crowd. They never got to go to anything. In those days, they didn't have organizations like now and places where people got help. Those people were kept to the side and out of. Do you know why? Because the teaching of the day was if you had a physical handicap, God was punishing you because of something that you did wrong. So if you had someone like that in your family, you kept them far away and hid from everybody because you didn't want anybody to think you were one of those people. If you had a baby that was born blind, you know what they said? They said it was because the parents had done some kind of a sin. So that when you went to crowds, you did not ever see. You just saw the shiny, bright people with their church smiles on and everything. didn't see any of the handicapped, struggling physically, blind, deaf, but you saw them in Jesus' crowd. You saw rich people, really super, super rich people roll up in their Ferrari, you know, and then you saw really super, super, super poor people that, you know, were panhandling at the same time as they were watching Jesus. And you saw young people and old people and little children were everywhere. That was the other thing. Children were not allowed to do that. And they were everywhere with Jesus in the crowd. They were running every place. People was like, get those kids away from Jesus. I like kids. And, you know, he let them come and they were everywhere. And Peter would have seen that. He'd have been like, who is this? How come he's not excluding anyone? What's the last thing you were excluded from? And you really, really wanted to do it. But you didn't have the qualifications, or you weren't the right age, or you were the wrong sex, or you were too big, or you were too old, or whatever. And they just excluded you. They didn't include you. They didn't invite you. You didn't get to go. You were excluded. And when Peter sees the crowd, he's like, this is amazing. Nobody's excluded. So ask yourself the question, is Jesus worth following? Well, if you've ever been stung by the pain of being excluded, he might be, because he'll never exclude you, ever. So he's worth following if you want to be with someone that will never exclude you. He's worth following. Now, let's follow a bit longer in Peter's life here. He has this amazing sort of relationship with Jesus. And when you have a relationship with Jesus, here's one of the things that happens. You start to expand what you think can happen in your life. So you used to think you couldn't go to college or anything like that, but then you start to walk with Jesus and you start to rewrite things and you start to challenge old ideas, thinking, well, maybe I can do that. Maybe I don't have to just survive in life. Maybe I can shoot for something. Maybe I can shoot for succeeding at something. And so Peter, look what he does here. This is crazy guy. Then Peter got down out of the boat. So here's what happened. They're all camping, and Peter and some guys were out in a boat. And I don't know if Jesus wanted to play a practical trick, or maybe he has a sense of humor. I don't know what it was. But he starts walking on the water out towards the boat. And I know if you don't believe in miracles, just bear with me in this. But it's just a story. Jesus starts walking on the water out towards the boat. And it says in the story that it sort of scares them. They see this guy coming, and they're trying to make sense of it. They go, that looks like a person. This is freaky. You know, and then they realize it's Jesus. And look what Peter does. Peter got down out of the boat, walked on the water and came towards Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid, and beginning to sink, he cried out, Lord, save me. Immediately, Jesus reached out his hand and caught him. Oh, you of little faith, he said, why do you doubt? Peter had said to Jesus as he's coming, he said, Jesus, is that you? It is you. I want to walk on the water too. Who's got a ridiculous dream in here? It is a ridiculous dream. It's a dream. The house that you want, there's no way you should ever even think you're going to get that house. That's not a house for people. That's not some, you know, the type of retirement that you want to have one day, the college that you want to see your kids go to, the husband that you want to marry someday. It is so far off the charts. You don't even tell anyone. It would literally be like trying to walk on water. That's how silly it is. Do you know how many people in this world just shoot to survive? I just want to survive my marriage, man, as long as I don't get divorced. I don't want to be like all these other people in my family. I just want to survive these kids, man, and get them out the door. I just don't want to get fired. I just want to survive my job. I just want to make quota this month. I just am trying to survive. And here's why. Because at one point in their life, they tried to walk on water, and they almost drowned. And they barely survived it. And I don't blame them for being a little gun-shy now. But if you're following Jesus and you start to drown, he will grab your hand. Because when you're following him, your failure is not final. He'll pull you up and get you settled and say, okay, let's give it another try. You can shoot for number one salesman. You can shoot for the 6-bedroom house with an acre lot. You can shoot for reconciliation with your parents. We got in a little tussle at work, and this other salesman, he got a sale that I thought was mine. And I didn't like it. And I didn't feel very Christian about it, I'll tell you that. And the crazy thing was, it all happened right in front of my desk. So, and the worst part about it is I'm training a new guy. So I'm supposed to be all nice and everything to him and show him what's going on. And under my breath, I'm just pissed off at this guy that I think got my sale. And he's with the people right in front of me. Hi, how are you? This is nice that you're getting this and everything. And I'm just livid. So I'm thinking in my mind, oh, man. Okay. For rule number one, don't throw anything at him. That's embarrassing. Don't do that. Rule number two, don't hate him. Don't get mad. Don't get angry. And then all of a sudden, it was like Jesus grabbed me and took me by the hand and said, what if you were happy for him? And I'm like, well, what if you were happy for him? You know, no, really. What if I could do something in your heart right now that you'd be happy for him and his family? How would you like to feel that in your soul right now? And I thought, man, now that's success, not survival. I just wanted to survive the moment. Do you know how many people in your life are just surviving? That's it. If they just get through another day without drowning. Is Jesus worth following? If you don't want failure to be final. If you want to shoot for success instead of survival. Oh, yes, he is. Now, let's look a little bit more here. So he gets down out of the boat. And then this next part, it starts to heat up for Jesus. He gathers everybody around, and we're here Easter, so I'm going to go right to the Easter story. It starts to get very, very tense between Jesus and the church leaders, and they're not happy with all these crowds. And Jesus tried to warn all of his friends. He said, listen, it's really coming to a head between me and the church, and they're going to come after me, and they're going to arrest me, and I'm going to be crucified, and I'm going to rise again. He tells them the entire story. It wasn't like a big secret. Jesus told them the entire story. He said, the church is going to come after me. They're going to arrest me. They're going to find me guilty, even though I'm innocent. They're going to hang me on a cross. But on the third day, I'm going to be resurrected, and it's all going to be okay. And they all look at me, and they go, come on. You know, no way. You know, and they're just like, they won't listen at all. They won't pay any attention to him whatsoever. And so look what happens here. It says, then they took Jesus to the high priest and all the chief priests and the elders and the teachers of the law came together. Peter followed. Look at this. Peter followed him at a distance right into the courtyard of the high priest. Now, when all of this was happening, Jesus said to all of his friends and to his family, he says, when this really goes down, every single one of you will betray me. You'll all run off. No one will stay by my side. And Peter raised his hand and said, not me, God. No way, not me, Jesus. I will be by your side no matter what. I will not leave your side. I will be in the foxhole with you no matter what happens, Jesus. I will be there for you. Mo looks at him and says, I appreciate that, Peter, but let me tell you something. I want you to be able to remember this. When this all happens, you actually will say three times that you don't even know who I am. And on the third time, just so you remember this moment, a rooster's going to crow, and you'll realize something. So let's read it. So the high priest, certainly this fellow was with him. He's a Galilean. Peter replied, man, and this is the third time, I don't know what you're talking about. Just as he was speaking, the rooster crowed, and the Lord turned and looked straight at Peter. When's the last time you made a commitment that you really meant to keep and you broke it? Or when's the last time someone made a promise to you and they really meant to keep it and they broke it? And it really hurt. It really hurt when you weren't able to keep your commitment, and it hurt when the promise was broken to you. Let's just break it down for a second. We all want to make promises and commitments, and we all want to keep them, and none of us can. We all want to say, Jesus, no way, man, not me. I will be there for you. Honey, it'll never happen to us. I will never, ever be unfaithful. I will be at all your games. I'll never, ever, ever, ever get involved in something like that, like our friends did. We make the promises, and then they unravel. And it hurts when promises get broken. It hurts when I break them. It hurts when they're broken to me. And here's Peter in this moment, and I don't know how Jesus pulled this off. Because here's what would have happened. They got Jesus, and they took him to this church leader's home, and they start badgering him and accusing him of all these different things. And then somebody comes with this crazy idea. Take him to the governor. We've seen him enough. Because Israel's an occupied country. Romans rule the whole thing. Take him to the governor right now. Get him out of my sight. Take him to the governor. So they're shuttling Jesus through the courtyard, and somehow he makes the timing out just perfect that when Peter has his big fall, there's Jesus to look him straight in the eye. And here's what you need to know. Jesus didn't look away. And he didn't shake his head in shame. And he didn't hang his head down in rejection. He looked him straight in the eye. Just like he'll look you straight in the eye when you need him. Somehow Jesus knew. He said, boy, when Peter breaks that promise, when he isn't able to keep that commitment, he's going to need to see my face. He's going to need to see the look on my face when he totally, completely screws up. And he's going to need to know that I still love him and that I forgive him and I still want him. Is it worth following Jesus? Well, it is if you have trouble at times keeping commitments and you need to be forgiven. Is it worth following Jesus? Is it if you've done something that you thought you were never capable of doing, but you did it anyways, and you need to be forgiven? Then it's really worth following Jesus. When he looks you straight in the eye and there's nothing there but love, it's worth following him. Now, let's keep going on the story here so you can see it and kind of get an idea of what happens. On the first day of the week, very early in the morning, the women took the spices they had prepared and went to the tomb. They found the stone rolled away from the tomb, but when they entered, they did not find the body of the Lord Jesus. And just hold it there for a second. Oh, but one had William, let's just keep it there. So here's what happened. They take Jesus and they take him over to the Roman court, and there's a guy there named Pilate. And they tell Pilate this one thing. They say, listen, this guy can raise huge crowds up and he can cause a huge rebellion. And you should be worried about this guy, because if he decides to turn these crowds against the Roman nation, they're leaving with him, man. And what do you think Caesar would think of you if he found out we came and warned you and you didn't do anything about it? You better crucify him. And the Roman governor, he's thinking, what kind of entrapment is this? And he continues to tell him, this is an innocent man. He has never done anything wrong. I'm not going to murder and kill an innocent man. But what if Caesar finds out? So he sends some people out to find out, and they come back and they say, they might be right. He has thousands of followers out there. And they say that he does crazy things, like make blind people see again. And this could be a dangerous, you might want to listen. So Pilate gives the order, crucify him. And let's see what happens. While they were wondering about this, suddenly two men in clothes that gleamed like lightning stood beside them. In their fright, the woman bowed down with their faces to the ground. But the men said to them, why are you looking for the living among the dead? He's not here. He's risen. Now, most of us have heard about the cross story, and you know that it was no simple thing. Once they decide that they're going to crucify Jesus, they hand him over to a very special military person. And it's a person that just, they have the temperament for torture. That's their job. They do hundreds and hundreds of crucifixion. This is not a sterile form of execution. This, you get blood on your hands when you do this one. When you're this close to the face that you're nailing the nails into his hand. So it takes a certain type of soldier that can even do that. And not only that, there's torture that has to be done before they go to the cross. Do you know in the Bible it says that Jesus was so beaten that when he was on the cross, he was unrecognizable? I don't know if you've ever been in a good fight. You got hammered pretty good, but you could always, everybody always knew it was you. It said he was when his friends and family saw him on the cross, there was three people. They initially can't tell which one it is because he's so beaten up. And then when he dies on the cross, they put him in a tomb. And that's interesting too. Jesus told the church leaders, he had kind of a sense of humor. He says, go ahead and kill me, and 3 days later, I'll rise from the dead. And they, right. Well, so after they killed Jesus and put him in the tomb a couple days, someone came to one of the church leaders and said, do you remember what he said about that rising thing? I bet it doesn't mean anything. That's just a bunch of hooey and everything. But I just thought you might want to think about it. I mean, he said he was going to rise out of the tomb and everything. And the leader says, let's roll a big rock in front of that hole. What a contradiction. You're not God. You're not special. But even though you're dead, we're going to block you from coming out. And he does come out. Now, I want you to see this next part. Put this up here. This is what happens. Okay, so when they came back from the tomb, they told all these to the 11 and to all the others. It was Mary Magdalene, Joanna, Mary the mother of James, and the others with them, all women, who told this to the apostles, but they did not believe the women because their words seemed like nonsense. Girls, it was going on way back then too, man. Way back then, the men would not listen to what you had to say. It seemed like nonsense to them. Let's see the next line. Peter, however, here he is again in the story. Can you imagine Peter? Lord, Lord, I'll be there for you. Never, no, it's going to be great. And what do you think all the followers are thinking? How could they kill Jesus? What are we going to do now? How are we going to follow him? That was the whole thing. It was about following. It wasn't rules and books and all this. It was about following. And now he's dead. And they're probably thinking, did anybody write down anything he said? Did anybody pay attention? Do we have anything left from him? You know, they're wondering, what are we going to do? Peter, however, got up and ran to the tomb. Bending over, he saw the strips of linen lying by themselves. And he went away wondering to himself what had happened. So if you were at a movie and you saw that, what do you think, like, what would be in your mind? Nobody else leaves. They think, those girls, man, always coming up with tall tales. Not Peter, though. Because remember, he'd seen the crowds. He'd seen all the women that were not excluded. And so he's like, well, wait a minute now. Hold on. So he runs over there, and he sees this tomb empty, and he's wondering to himself. And I hope you're wondering at this moment, is Jesus worth following? Because he's probably wondering to himself, is he back? Jesus was in Jerusalem 40 days after he rose from the dead, and 500 different people saw him. Within 20 years, a city of 250,000, 125,000 of them were Christ followers. We know this from archaeological history. This is just facts. Do you know why? Because if Abraham Lincoln came back the dead and walked around Salt Lake City for 40 days, it would draw some attention. And he's back. And everybody saw it. Now, this next little section, and this is what we're going to end with today, Peter's not sure what to do, so he decides he's going to go back to his old ways and be a commercial fisherman. And by the way, when you walk with Jesus and you're following him, you'll have your times where you think, I don't know if I'm going to do this anymore. I'm just going to go back to my old way of life. So Peter decides, I'm just going to try to go back and fish. I'm going to reopen my business. And he's out fishing. He's out fishing. He's got his boat out there. And he thinks he sees someone on the shore that looks like Jesus, because the person is yelling at him. He said, Peter, Peter, he's going like this. And Peter looks there, and he starts to say to his partner, he says, is that Jesus? And he's saying, but listen, this is the grieving process. You have to work through it, you know. And says, no, really, that I know Jesus when I see Jesus. And that is it. He jumps out of the boat and starts swimming like a madman towards the shore, towards this person that he knows is Jesus. And closer he gets, closer he gets, closer he gets. And when he gets there, there's the Lord. And he's so practical. It says that he has a fire going, and he has some bread, and he's cooking some fish. And he says, come on over and have some breakfast. And after breakfast, he pulls Peter aside, and they have a little talk. And that's what I want to read to you. When they had finished eating, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? Yes, Lord, he said, you know that I do. I wonder if the most important or maybe the most difficult or hurtful pain is when you love someone and they stop loving you. I mean, if you had to rank them, I wonder if that's at the top. You love someone. You give your heart to them. And that can happen at 12 years old. You know, it could happen at 55 years old. You love some divorce, fight with your parents, your bestie doesn't like you anymore, something goes on with your brothers and sisters. Is there anything that hurts more than loving someone and having them stop loving you? Is Jesus worth following? He is if you want to love someone that will always love you back. If you want to love someone with your whole... This is like the way that Jesus Christ told Peter, I am so safe to love, Peter, because I will never stop loving you back. You will never have to fear. You can give me your whole... He says, Peter, now that you've seen everything, don't you think you can give me your whole heart? Because you know now, huh? I'll always love you back. I always will. I guess Paul McCartney's coming to town. I don't know if you guys heard that. He's coming to town here. It's going to be a senior citizens concert, I guess. And my friend is a big Paul McCartney fan, so he went onto the website, and he was going to get tickets to get on the website. So he goes, he's watching. This is a big Paul McCartney guy. He's watching on the website. He's the countdown, and when it's opening up to get tickets, he's right there. And so boom, the second hits, and he gets some tickets. The tickets comes up, and he looks at him. He goes, oh, man, that's not where I want to be. So he gives those tickets away, and he goes again. 45 seconds have gone by now. Paul McCartney coming to the Salt Palace, Salt Lake City. 45 seconds, he goes, I don't want those tickets. I want these tickets. Concert was completely sold out. 45 seconds for an old Beatle. That's impressive. And when I thought about that, I thought, is that amazing? What will move people and cause people to follow and go? And is Jesus worth following? Look at the bottom line today. And I put these here so you can just take a moment and write them in. I hope you got a pen or something that you can write them in with. Is Jesus worth following? Well, you're not disqualified. Is Jesus worth following? Well, we'll never be excluded. Is Jesus worth following? Our failures are never final. Is Jesus worth following? We'll be forgiven. Is Jesus worth following? If you want to love someone that will always love you back, he is. That comes directly from the life of a follower, Peter. A person that had walked away from church and had gotten far from God, and had wondered, how do I get back to God, and can I have God in my everyday, ordinary life without being a religious fanatic? And these are the reasons that Peter followed, and the same ones that we can. We're not disqualified. We'll never be excluded. Our failures are not final. We'll be forgiven, and we'll always love someone that will love us back.